Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
You now listen to The Coaches Network, a podcast aiming to bring people at the heart of player development together. My name is Coach Yas, a UEFA A licensed NFL goalkeeping B licensed coach with over 10 years experience working in youth football from grassroots right through to Premier League academies. I'm currently operating as an affiliate tutor for the FA, alongside working towards a master's in performance football coaching. I'll be sitting down with coaches, coach educators, and key figures in the game to have free-flowing conversations and discuss the challenges, lessons learned, and effective trends in the coaching world today. As usual, I'll be joined by my co-hosts,
Ahmed,
Ben, and Sherlin.
Welcome back, guys. How you guys doing?
All good.
Yeah, good.
Today, we're just going to be looking at the concept of individual coaching, unit coaching, team coaching, whether one is more preferable than the other, whether one has, a bigger part to play in the development of players or the other, and also what our perspective on the different elements of that those things are. I'm just going to start by looking at individual coaching. Obviously, you know, there's the different aspects to this. We can look at it from a perspective of looking at the individual within the group or team unit. Alternatively, you know, there's a large rise in numbers, in my opinion, of coaches going down a one-to-one coaching pathway, predominantly looking at more technical aspects, but you know, we will explore what that looks like on a whole. What are your guys' thoughts on the whole individual coaching aspect? Let's initially start with the whole one-to-one side of things, and then we can, I guess, delve into the other side of things later on.
Yeah, in terms of individual coaching, I personally feel like football has always probably been behind in that aspect. That, like, when you kind of look at other sports, such as basketball, the only reason why I say basketball is just because I watch it a lot, so I can relate to it a lot. They all, if not most players, have individual coaches, as well as the coaches that are based within teams they'll be working on specific individual things. So they actually have multiple one-to-one coaches that will be helping them to own their skill, especially at the senior level, where they'll actually start specifying even more to have more coaches for different aspects of the game. So,
as it stands, just based on what you're saying, sorry to cut you off,
are you saying that in the sport of basketball, there's actually coaches who are specifically assigned to specific players, or is it a coach that has it maybe a host of players on his I guess remit?
It's a mixture of both. So like it'll be, you know, like within the teams themselves, coaches will have like a team of coaches that'll be working with these players individually. And then on the in terms of the player aspect, they'll have their extra individual coach that they'll be working with predominantly on like the off-season period. So like you see it now more and more in football now that like once the season's finished or you start approaching pre-season, that's when one-to-one coaching sessions start to become more and more prevalent.
Mm. And just, I guess, on that, do you feel that that's where football is going to be going? Do you think that's, you know, we're already starting to hit the landscape of where we're getting a lot of that one-to-one stuff going on? I know that obviously there is a lot of stuff going on pre-season and stuff in the off-season, as you put it. Do you feel that there's a place for that, that those extra individuals doing those bits of work during the season as well?
Yeah, I do, because I feel like, and we can all admit this, that like the culture of football has changed from when we were growing up. Kids aren't playing out as much. They're not getting that sort of unstructured sort of learning time that they will usually get within like playing on the streets or on grass and stuff like that. So with that, the contact time, for me personally, I don't feel like the contact time that they get at training is enough to necessarily develop them to, like in my context, like in YDP, to develop them to be going on to the next level that they always need to be doing extra. And just because of the way like the world is formed now, is a lot harder for them to obviously go out like that and do that sort of unstructured sort of learning opportunities, or just playing out against different players of different sizes and whatnot. So this is probably the next best alternative for them to do.
Right, and then within that, then, so do you think that's something that the club themselves should be, I guess, implementing, or should the onus be left to the players? To the best,
I think it's slowly starting to happen because there is more and more coaches that actually, it's more so quite common in like the Dutch sort of academies where they have individual technical coaches for players, and that I've seen it now slowly starting to creep in on a more part-time basis within the English academy setups. But I definitely see it going in that direction because they have to. At the moment, there is this little gap that's happening where it's only the kids that are making it are the kids that are doing a lot extra outside of their team sort of based training sessions. So, you know, then this needs to be addressed by the clubs because if when you think about it from a financial standpoint, not every kid will be able to be getting one-to-one coaches like that.
So, no, you're right, because for a lot of people that do, I guess, offer that sort of service, it can be quite pricey. And as you put, you know, a lot of people can't afford it. So I mean, what would you advise to those who maybe can't afford it but maybe should be looking to do some extra bits? What would you advise to those kids there?
Well, for those kids,
or even for coaches who can maybe, I guess, signpost or prescribe something to the players that they've got.
Yeah, so twofold, I guess. So, like for the players, I always encourage them to pick the brains of their coaches and ask the coaches for to create some sort of program that they can be doing outside of the club, in order to address whatever. Or it can be their technical strengths. It can be stuff that they'll need to improve on based on their position. Just so that they're a lot more competent playing within that area of the field. For coaches, I feel like this is where they need to start taking the onus. I mean, we've been going on about in these previous episodes now about getting to know your players. So knowing the sort of environments that your players come from and what access your players have to things. So like I'll say that, like, let's say is a kid that probably can't go out that much and whatnot. Like it's a lot difficult to do. you may encourage him to start coming, if possible, a bit earlier to training, and then you will come a bit earlier with him and then do some technical work with him then before the rest of the group come. You know, it may be that he's doing a bit separate from the group at the beginning of the training, etc., just so that, you know, he's addressing his individual program as much as he can.
Ahmed Shell, you got any thoughts on the whole aspect of, I guess, the one-to-one coaching and, I guess, its place in, I guess, development of players, essentially?
For me, in terms of one-on-one, I personally feel that it's a very powerful tool for a player to have access to. I've been a bit out of touch with coaching for a couple of years in terms of, like, doing it firsthand. But for me, when I think of one-on-one, I always relate back to the influence that parents have. And for me, the reason why some players don't kick on as they should do, because they get a lot of negative one-on-one coaching from their parents.
So just on that then,
go for it.
And I guess it's a question for all of you. What do you feel are the key, I guess, components or characteristics that are required from the coach that might be different to when the coach is working in a team setting that are ultimately crucial in a one-to-one setting?
It's all tailored, basically. What one-to-one should be tailored specifically for that individual. And for me, like, I was just touching back on the thing I said about, like, how it being a powerful tool, and you can see the importance of it, because when you have a kid that is got a very influential parent and they're barking up the wrong tree, the progress is minimal, because it is such a powerful tool, that one-on-one setting. So for me, it's all about knowing the player you're working with, making it tailored for them, and the benefits, like Ben said, are really, really good for the individual, and they seem to be the ones that are kicking on and progressing even more than kids that are not doing one-on-ones.
Yeah, I'll probably go along the similar lines as the other guys. You kind of get a lot of negative personal trainers, and when I say negative, I'm talking about people that seem to look like they're doing it to create their own fame instead of the actual essential needs of the individual player. And, you know, you see a lot over the internet, whether that's Instagram or Twitter, it seems like there's a new coach popping up every second of the moment. And a lot of them are doing repetitive stuff that really and truly the players are getting, whether it's in grassroots or academy. And going along the line where Ben was saying about either coming in a bit more earlier, because they don't have the resources, you know, in their day-to-day life that probably other players get to have. So use that as much as possible. But more importantly, I think personal training can become something that even players of all ages can actually access themselves, in a sense where, alongside what Ben said as well earlier on regarding, you know, conversating with the club that they're at or the specific coaches that they're working with, on areas that they could improve on, and not necessarily just improve on, but could make into some serious strengths going forward. Because a lot of these personal trainers are coming out and doing these fancy videos and high-tech designs where, you know, we're going to make you into this. I mean, you can't make someone, you can only guide them. So for me, if you're going to be a personal trainer, you've got to be an all-round person, and you've got to look at something we spoke about earlier, you know, before in a recent podcast regarding the four corners. So personal training can come down to things such as the psychological side of the game and, you know, the players' barriers that you can try to work on, whether that's going away and finding different footage from players that's achieving high in the game, or just trying to tap into their own player skill set themselves instead of having someone that's saying, I can do this, I'm going to charge you £50 an hour or something. You know, and then upload it and say, yeah, cut out all the best bits and not look at the bits where they could be struggling. So personal training is a wide area.
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, just one thing I would say, if for anyone looking to step into that realm, I think ultimately you've got to know yourself. You've got to be confident in I guess, what you're bringing to the table. I mean, I've seen many coaches and I wouldn't trust my dog with them.
Don't even have a dog. That's how bad it is.
That's my point. That's how bad it is. I don't even like dogs. But I still wouldn't trust my dog with him. But it's and I say that to make a point. There's a lot of people, as you said, there, Sheldon. You know, there's a new coach popping up every minute. I guess on this one-to-one personal training gimmick, they're just jumping on the bandwagon a little bit. I don't think there's enough coaches actually out there knowing exactly how they're going to help these players. I think it's definitely something, you know, if there's any parents listening to this, I think it's because, you know, let's be honest, one of the biggest challenges for the parent is sometimes lack of knowledge themselves in terms of where they can get quote unquote good coaching or I guess appropriate coaching for their child, whether that be in the psychological.
To understand that they can do a lot themselves. Like, just like I said, it can be a big negative because it's such a powerful tool, the one-on-one, but there's a lot of resources out there. They can go on YouTube, they can go on Instagram. You've got to sift through like the garbage, but there is some.
But that's what I mean. For a lot of parents who maybe aren't as clued up or don't have as much insight, it's very difficult for them to sift through that garbage, as you put it.
Yeah, but I guess it will become a trial and error process, but it's better than not doing nothing, if you know what I mean.
Is it really? I mean, because I think when you look at it, if you have a bad experience, but you don't know, you don't know any better, then
yeah, but ultimately,
is that better than not experiencing it?
But ultimately, progress will be shown from the player, if it is or not, you know what I mean?
But I'm not, like I said, with parents, I think it's a difficult one because I've had parents come to my session sometimes where, you know, my coaching doesn't look as traditional as you know, some others. I know I'm not really heavy on the command style approach, which is what probably a lot of parents would associate with coaching. I'm very laid back. I don't have a lot of interventions. And when I do, most of them are just speaking to players as the session's going along rather than actually stopping the practice. And I've actually had in the past where parents will come to me and say, well, and, you know, I can come back with a smart response, but it's like, well, when are you going to start watching what I'm actually doing then? It's important for coaches to understand that parents sometimes don't know any better. So it's about educating the parent as well as the player in understanding. I think that whole one-to-one coach, I think quite often it's, the coach does you know, there is often occasions where the coach does sell dreams to the to the parent and the player at times, but I think there is a massive responsibility on the parents to maybe go out there and try and seek some sort of guidance around that. But ultimately, the one to one coaching part, how much of an impact, or rather, how much emphasis should be placed on that? So, how much time do you reckon should be dedicated to one to one coaching if players have got the opportunity to get access to it? If not, as opposed to maybe being in a team or unit based sessions or small group sessions, however you want to see it.
Well, we kind of like touched on it in that last episode when we talked about opposed practice. Like, yes, it's going to be beneficial, but it clearly does have its limitations in the sense that in terms of sort of like game related understanding and certain physical aspects and demands of the game is limited in that sense there. But however, in terms of pure sort of technical focus, and there is certain physical aspects that you can actually concentrate on, such as the agility and the acceleration and whatnot, and actual physical load that they're doing within the sessions that can be more focused on within the sessions. So, like, I do feel like it does have certain benefits, which is more of a magnifying glass on that player there and then. You know, really trying to focus on you know, their sort of, their technical profile and whatnot, their physical profile to a certain extent, as well as, you know, actually trying to develop the person as well, because I've heard. And like, as well as we've been talking about, like, you know, a bunch of like bad one-to-one coaches, but I've heard some really good ones doing some really good stuff with players that probably had the whole package already, but their mentality wasn't there. So like, they started to get one-to-one coaching, but what it ended up being was more so life coaching and then just the maintenance of the ability that the player have already. So like, you know, there's plenty of benefits to it, but like I said, linked to last episode, there's limitations to it, where, like, you can do all these, spoke about last episode, you can do all this dribbling around cones, but it looks completely different than when you're going against a body, and a body that can physically impose itself on your body that can tackle you.
Can I just stress, it's not about it looking different. There is no cones in the football.
Oh my goodness.
There's no cones.
Yeah, you got
cones are for warm-ups, if that.
Yeah, that's a separate discussion. Yeah, so you know what I mean. But on the sense where personal coaching, communication is key. So if the parent is not too fully aware of what their child, you know, needs going forward, it's a case where I think clubs can help out a lot by describing certain elements where they could improve on. And if the parent chooses to go and get a personal coach, at least they've got that feedback there to say, right, this is what, you know, their club is looking to work on. And if you can give anything extra, then that would be a bonus. Because if you don't have that communication there, then you've got two separate parties going in different directions, because the parent's thinking that they know the best thing for their child, which by rights they have every right to do. But for the best of the child, you've got to have that level of communication where each one is understanding.
Let me take you back a second. Do the parents really have the right if they don't have an understanding of what's of the landscape?
Yes, because number one, you've got to remember the biggest thing is that's their child. Regardless of what age they are, that's their child. And again, it's also down, like I said before, down to the club to have that strong communication where you're expressing what's the best needs all round, not for the club, not for the parent, but for the child, all round of the child.
Rather, should the parent then have... Okay, you're saying the parent has a right? I guess, let me rephrase my question. Should the parent, if they're going to go down the path of, I guess, asserting that right, should they not be more proactive in identifying what is the best way to support the player?
Yes, and that's also down to the responsibility of the club too. So,
yeah,
regardless of anything else, you know, there's that big word, safeguarding. Safeguarding covers all aspects, and all aspects includes all parties involved with that child. Now, the club has an agenda, a philosophy to follow, and the parent has chosen to join that club for that child. So both parties, club and parent, need to work in the best interests of the child all around, not just their ability on the ball, but the well-rounding of that human being, basically, which, again, comes down to safeguarding.
So is there a right time for players to start participating in one-to-one coaching?
I don't think there's a right time. I don't think there's a right time. I think there's just a time. And when that time comes, it will actually be right, yes. But you can't pinpoint a certain day or time or how many times during the week. It's just got to be a right style of program which is going to benefit the child. And as long as there's good communication, as I said before, between club and parent, then you get the gist of both worlds. Plus, you have the input of the child too, because a child is going to be a child regardless of the age. They've got school, they've got social life, they've got, you know, they've got pressures as we as adults have got pressures. And it's about making sure that what they're doing extra is not interfering in their way of life. And their way of life, which is the big thing, is enjoying that way of life, regardless of the age going forward. So communication is a strong key to diagnose what type of training or trainer that they need, should they need it for their child.
Can I just
ask? I've got a question.
Basically, what I was going to say, I feel how, like, with Yaz's question, like, what age do you think is appropriate? I think it's really interesting how all of us, we didn't have, like, an age group in our head, but we're all kind of just talking about players under the age of 16. You know what I mean? We haven't really mentioned, like, adults.
No, not at all. My question was just open generically. Yeah, exactly. Like, is there a right time for a player to...
Well, I think subconsciously, I think we all kind of realise that that one-on-one will have more of an influence, like, on the under-16s, more so than someone that's over the age of 16. But then I think what they would benefit from, the older players, would be maybe the maturing side of the game. Because you always see, like, even with professional football players, it's like they're doing well, but then it's like they mature as a person and then they kick on and find that other level. So, but yeah, no, I just wanted to... It's just an observation. I noticed how we kind of all kind of gearing it towards.
It's interesting, football, but I personally have got some people who I do one-to-one coaching with, and majority of them are actually 18 plus.
Interesting.
I've wound down a little bit now. I've maybe five or six with at the moment, and four of them are over 18.
Yeah, but maybe that comes back to your theory of maybe parents not sure what they're doing, and then these players, they're sure that they want some help and they're old enough to go about it by themselves now, and they've actually found a good coach.
Mm.
So, yeah. So that could...
No, I find it... In that sense. The question I want to ask is just like, does it have to necessarily be one-to-one for them to get individual coaching? So, like, can it not be like a small group sort of set up of about like 5 to 6 players that are of, likability and whatnot?
I used to do that personally. When I used to do my one-on-one sessions, I used to purposely try and get 2 kids there, and I used to try and pass on some of that savings for the
players. Okay, well, right. Can I just hold you there?
Because I knew they would...
Can we go back to that? Go back to what you just said there. Now, is that because that was more convenient for you as the coach and your schedule, or do you feel that that was actually more useful and beneficial for the players? And there's no right or wrong answer here, is it?
No, I identify it as being better for the parents. I mean, for the players personally, in terms of like what they can get out of the session.
Right, but then now, what happens now in? I guess how much thought has gone into actually planning that session to meet the needs of both players? Or is it right? And this is what I asked this question, and I'm not insinuating anything, but a lot of coaches who are going down the path of doing this one-to-one stuff are just setting up some random practices for the players and saying, yep, I'm going to develop your skills. I'm going to develop this and whatever, but it's not actually tailored around the needs of those particular players in front of you. It's rather, I'm the coach. I'm going to decide what we're going to do. And this is what we're going to do, rather than looking at the player, maybe where the gaps might be or where the key areas of development could be for that player in line with where they want to get to next, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a fair comment. But me, I used to always, I'm not, it's just, I like to work on weaknesses.
Right,
and if it's a one-on-one environment, then we're working on...
Okay, so rather than how much thought goes into that, actually, who you're going to pair with who? Or is it actually you two are available at 4 o'clock on the Friday night, and that's when I finished my maths lesson with Ben, so let's come along and do our session?
No. It was never like that. It was always to benefit the players' development, and I thought if I paired them, or sometimes even grouped them into a 3, it was never more than 3. And it used to work well. It used to work well, personally.
So are you saying that actually small group sessions are going to be more effective than individual sessions in that respect then?
Yeah, I guess it just comes down to that amount of time that the child gets with the player gets with the coach. And obviously when it is a small group, you know, you can give more time. And it does still feel like a one-on-one. Like they're still working as if it is a one-on-one. It's very intensive, you know. So And it's always a way to like get players to see how other players done things that they never necessarily played with.
Mm.
They need new friends. So it wouldn't necessarily be kids from the same club or the same area, because I used to coach in a few areas back in the day. So I used to work quite well, actually.
And what kind of age group would you predominantly work with in your one-to-ones then?
The one-to-ones was normally between the age of 12 and 15. Okay. But I'd never put a 12-year-old or a 15-year-old. It'd always be like a 12 to 13 kind of thing. It would never be like a 5-year-old with a 10-year-old. And that's just, you know what I mean? Just for my convenience.
Okay. And I said, just in terms of you being able to manage the differences then?
What do you mean?
So if they were able to cope with it, would you put them together?
What, a 5 and a 10-year-old?
12 and a 15-year-old, theoretically.
No, I don't think I'd put a 12 or a 15-year-old. Just
Even if it was Messi, that was a 12-year-old.
No, I think he could get hurt personally, so I wouldn't do it. It's just, you know...
It's interesting you say that, right? Because I'm from a school of thought that actually you can't control what's going to happen on the match day, so just chuck him in.
Yeah, but he's going to be playing with the same age group at least. Maybe a year.
But you might have a player who's got all sorts of capabilities, all sorts of characteristics. So you might have a player who's actually that 15-year-old. You might have a 12-year-old who that player comes up against physically. Next week physically as just as dominant as that 15-year-old.
I was just generalizing. Like, if you want to talk specifically, then I can see it plausibly it can happen. But for me, yeah, I wouldn't.
Because why I say that? Because you think back to when Whitmore. I know it's a longer track back for yourself than it is for myself and Ben. But that's where I'm going with it. You know what I mean? Like me and Ben got better by playing with people likes of your age and maybe your parents' age, like Sherlin.
Whatever. I knew it was coming. Cool.
So, but there's a place for that, right? I mean, surely if you feel that the players that you're working with, are in need of some sort of challenge in that respect, or they can manage that task, then why would you shy away from that? I mean, it's not really a question that needs to be answered, but it's just something that's kind of in my head right now.
I guess it comes back to that point that you said about the parents, where they kind of thought you were doing nothing at the session. And it's like, is someone going to pay you £40 an hour for their kid to get kicked and moved around by an older boy? Even though they might not see the.
But this is where I guess for me the one in especially I mean not just a one to one coach and even just in general when you're working with a team or not, it's that open relationship with the parent for me is vital. They need to know if you're working with players that are being supervised by parents essentially. I think that conversation needs to take place, right? And this is why, obviously, when you're now looking at academies and stuff like that, they're actually sitting down with the parents every 6 weeks and the player as at the heart of it and identifying for the player and making it clear, this is what we're going to work on in the next cycle. These are the targets. These are the things that we're going to put in place to support this player. And it might look like this. It might not be as rosy as you think it's going to look. It might actually take us a step back before we move forward. But these are the measures that we're going to take, if that makes sense. And I think, for me, a lot of one-to-one coaches that I've observed, that I've come across, and I've just, don't take those steps to make that communication clear. And not because they don't necessarily want to, rather they don't want to because maybe they don't have the actual justification, rationale for why they're doing what they're doing. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I think, for coaches who are maybe considering going down that path of doing one-to-ones, strongly consider what your, rationale is for the way you work. Why are you working the way you're working? And if someone asks you, are you able to come and explain and break down, well, this is why we're doing this, and actually mean what you say, if that makes sense. But kind of moving away from that a little bit. So how much, if we look at percentages now, how much of a percentage or a part do you think the individual coaching has to play as opposed to the team coaching or that team environment coaching? And I say team environment because I think having a team or a larger group of players I generally mean over maybe 10 or 12 players as opposed to a small number where maybe it might be 3 or 4. How important do you think it is that players are getting access to that environment? And obviously, how much of a ratio would you say that they need to be spending in each of those environments? I mean, what are your thoughts?
For me, I can only base it back on the context I work in, and it's obviously youth development. So generally, we're trying to focus on the individuals within the groups up, and of course, there is limitations with that just due to the sort of time or contact time that you can get with them between two coaches and about a group of 12 to 15 players at times. I feel that it is beneficial for them to do, just as an individual itself. Then the sort of things that that they'll probably look to be addressing within their group setup is their relation with other players. Based on my setup, we still focus on the technical aspect of it quite heavily, but is how that now links to other players. So maybe predominantly working on more off the ball sort of aspects, so that your movement in correlation to others, the distances that you keep between others, as well as your gaining a great understanding of your role and responsibilities in the different moments of the game.
Yeah, I think, again, I go back to something I said earlier on, just enjoyment. You know, coaches, we're personal coaches, they seem to want to be based just around the technical side of things. But as Ben mentioned earlier on, kids are not playing outside as much anymore. So when you've got players at grassroots or academy, they may be under a lot of pressure considering there's other players that could be better than them. So for me, if you're going to have a personal trainer, try and incorporate as much fun into what they're doing, which gains them much, much more confidence. And if they're gaining much more confidence, they're going to perform it on their, you know, their Sundays or Saturdays at their grassroots or academy clubs. And when that happens, the parent can see it and they're more in the loop of what they may need going forward, or just or may need to stop. You'll have a better understanding once you can see the kid enjoying it at a better element.
I just had a thought regarding your question, Yaz. When you, like, and I'm guilty of this myself, and I'm sure a lot of other coaches are, when we have that group together, do we just do group stuff, or are we still mainly just doing individual stuff for them to progress individually? Ooh. And to be honest, looking back at my practices, a lot of the stuff was maybe not, like, more so individual technique and learning how to shoot or tackle, but not very rarely, but I reckon more often, just from this conversation, moving forward, when I've got a group, I'm going to make sure the outcomes is for the group rather than for the individual. And I'm not sure whether that's something that other coaches feel that they do. It'd be interesting to see what you guys have to say on that. But yeah, that was just a thought kind of.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, it should always be about the individual. It should always worry about the individual.
But then when you got the group,
the group will have a general theme that we're looking
at. Organization.
Yeah, so we're going to have some sort of structure for the whole group to participate in. But actually, within that structure, how do we nail down the development needs for those individuals? So, I mean, the way I view it is this. Sherlyn, you're right. You don't make players. You help support and develop players. And I don't like the whole idea of people saying, oh, I produced him. No, you didn't produce anything. You're not his mum.
Exactly.
I disagree. I disagree.
Go on.
For me, like I said, for me, decision making is very important. And some players do need that more than guidance. They need to be told, listen, in no uncertain terms, if you're in this situation.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
This is what is needed if you want to make it to the highest level. There's no.
I mean, if I did it, then I'd be in a completely different position. Ultimately, they can give me that information. They can take me to the water, but they can't make me drink it. So,
my thing is, like, if I'm taking responsibility of, like, producing that player, I need to take responsibility for the hundreds of bad players.
100%. But I tell you what, the hundreds of bad players that didn't make it, you probably even forgot their names.
Absolutely. It's a two way. It's
so you got to take it both ways. So for me, I don't think it's possible for coaches to. I don't think it's right for coaches to say, "Oh, I produced him." No, you might have had a part in the development of that player. But how much of an impact you personally had, you will never know unless that player has that raises that information to you or brings that to your awareness.
Yeah,
so I think that aspect, because you might think, oh yeah, I'm working with Ben today. But how do you know that privately Ben hasn't had another math tutor? And you're thinking that you're going to take all the credit.
Betraying me, Ben.
but do you get what I'm going with it? That can happen.
Yeah,
so I think, for coaches, sometimes coaches blind themselves. Yeah, I had a massive part to play, or no, you don't know that.
It's a very influential role though, yes.
It has the potential to be, but.
And it can be the difference for a lot of players making the grade or not making the grade.
It has the potential to be, but like I said, for a coach to claim, oh, yeah, I did this and I did, no.
Yeah, but that's just being arrogant and just being like, yeah, you know, he's good for me. No, you helped him along his journey.
Ultimately, to come back to your question now, it's got to be an individual thing all the time. You've always got to think at the end of the day, we don't go in, we don't develop, we're not looking at, no matter what environment we're in, we're not developing teams. We're helping part of the process to develop individual players to move into successful environments for themselves. I'll give you an example.
Cristiano Ronaldo. Yeah, he went through a difficult time at Manchester United, went there at 18. You can tell he was going to be a world beater, but he puts a lot of his success down to the way Alex Ferguson, you know.
But yeah, so I mean, it comes back to kind of the conversation we was having a couple of weeks ago where...
It's a very, very influential
role. And it comes back to the conversation we was having a couple of weeks back around mentoring. And essentially, there's no difference for me, in my opinion, from, I guess... having the right mentor and having the right coach. You just need someone who can connect with you on an interpersonal level where they can actually understand, right, these are the needs. It's interesting, I was watching that documentary series that's just come out recently, The Last Dance, about the Bulls. And they were talking, I'm not sure if you guys had an opportunity to catch it yet, but there was one particular episode, the latest episode, where they're talking about Dennis Rodman.
Yeah.
Menace. Comes to the Bulls, and I can't remember the quote exactly, so I don't want to misquote it, but it was essentially, leave him alone, let him do what he's doing, because that's how he is. You've just got to leave people to, you've got to know how to approach different situations. You've got to learn how to deal with people in a way that works for them. Now, that doesn't mean let them get away with doing things that are inappropriate per se, but you've got to know how to manage the individual. So part of being a one-to-one coach, as you touched on it earlier, you guys, around, it's not just the technical aspect, it's actually the psychological aspect, the social aspect. You might have a player who's top-notch, who just wants a bit more support, who might need a bit more support in terms of maybe how to deal with pressure from a general standpoint. So it might be that actually one-to-one coaching might not be heavily focused around the technical side of things. I've had players that I've worked with in the past that we don't really do a lot of technical work at all. Some of them just wanted to go through footage and understand different aspects of the game from a tactical perspective, which has then helped their understanding. It is important, but I'm saying it's just going to highlight that actually it's not just one dimension. There's many different dimensions to it, but again, I don't want to kind of steer away from your question too much. For me, it's having the general goal for the team and saying, right, this is what the collective are going to be looking at, but within that, everyone's going to have their own individual roles, which then kind of leads on to, right, how effective and how successful are you with your practices design? How well can you design your practices to meet the needs of these players? How well can you apply, and we can talk, I'm sure we're going to talk about this at some point, but how well are we going to use different constraints to support the needs of our players? And what impact do those have if we are doing that? Is it appropriate? And is it okay sometimes to say, actually, you know, today we're really going to nail down and narrow our focus on these particular players here, and the rest of the players, yes, we still want you to get something out of it, but your outcomes might be completely different. like we might have three players here, we're saying, right, we're going to do a finishing session today. So therefore, on these particular players here, we're looking at a real technical outcome for them on their finishing, actually. But on the other side of it, the rest of the players, whoever those players may be, whatever those needs might be actually, we're going to really hone in on the physical corner for U4 over here, and for U5 over there, we're going to really nail down on the social corner and meet those needs all within one session, all about finishing, but actually we're tailoring the session and I guess challenging the needs of those players by adapting the practice in a way where it does do that.
I can give you an example where I've done that. So I've literally one time put the best defender, if you want to call him that, I said to him, listen, I don't care what's going on, you just stand next to him and you mark him. Whenever he gets the ball, you tear it. And he's like, "But yeah, but what about the ball?" I'm like, listen, just do as you're told, please, innit? Because basically, there was a point where everyone was just trying to give the ball to a certain player and he was just getting the goal. But for a youth team, that wasn't good enough for me because everyone has to develop. So I'm not just about winning. So I literally wanted to prove my point in that training session. If this guy is marked, you can't give him the ball because he can't do anything with it. And then slowly, slowly, the ball was going to other players and the point got across. But it took me a whole session to do that, but I didn't mind because it benefited the team and the individuals.
Do you think it benefited the individual that was scoring?
Pardon me?
Do you think it benefited the individual that was scoring after that?
No, but it wasn't the point. The point was just to get everyone to stop looking for this guy. It's basically like if you had like a Ronaldo, like he was head and shoulders, this boy. He was literally head and shoulders from my whole group. He was very, very good. So naturally, boys want to win.
There's a couple of things there. And I don't know whether Ben Shaw have anything to add to this, but for me, by you doing that, you have, to some extent, you may be asking the player who you've told to stay on him to do something that you wouldn't want him to do in a game.
Yeah, exactly. But,
what I'm trying to say is it might have been for one session, it might have been for 10 seconds, a part of your practice. But as soon as you do that, in my opinion, you lose your standing in terms of asking that player to do something different later on.
Yeah, fair enough. But in counter-argument, I know for a fact, and it's happened to this particular boy, after like 4 or 5 games in the season, he used to have 3 players on him, 2 players on him. So it was going to happen anyway. You get what I'm trying to say? But yet the boys were still trying to pass him the ball.
But if this player's got 2 or 3 players on him...
But they're still trying to pass him the ball, so it was becoming a problem.
You say it's becoming a problem, but clearly for them to be keep on giving that...
He's not the only player on the pitch.
But... And I use this example all the time. If you know, how much space is space? So if you've got Sherlin, and then you've got Ben, and then you've got Ronaldinho, they're all going to need different amounts of space. Ben might need 10 feet, Sherlin might need 2, and Ronaldinho might need 3 inches.
Yeah.
But you're looking at the individual. So if they're looking at that player and giving that player that ball, even though there's 2 or 3 players around him, they're giving it to him because they feel that he can handle that. Surely for me, I'm looking at, right, how am I going to challenge that player further? How am I going to stretch that player further? Rather than putting a constraint in the way of trying to deter the team from giving him the ball, maybe challenge them around, okay, when are we deciding to give that ball to him? And why are we deciding to give that ball to him? And then if he's in a moment where he's actually got those 2 or 3 players around him, understand, right, when might you want to get on it? And when might you actually suggest to the team, actually, now's not a good time for me to get it? Because you've got some players who are confident, completely confident, and they'll keep trying, and maybe don't get success. Then you've got some players who can do the job, but maybe aren't confident in actually doing it. So it's about, for me, it's about finding that right balance and then supporting those players. So as you said there, they keep giving that player the ball. There's a reason they keep giving it to him. Either the rest of the team ain't good enough, or they've identified this guy's excellent. So we're going to give it to him because he's our go-to man. Now, you've got to be aware of what impact that is going to have, your intervention is going to have on the development of that particular player. You've now, I guess, created an unrealistic situation by asking that particular player just to stay on him, because...
No, but it's not unrealistic. It happens in matches. It happens in matches. And not even just with one player, it'll be 2 or 3 players.
Fine. I mean, it's fair enough. I mean, I'm just suggesting that, you know, you might consider in the future potentially what the impact that would have if you're telling those players to do something that
basically, the gist of it was these players, I thought it was affecting their decision-making too much. It's like if you guys were playing with me, you'd always want to give me the ball, for example, innit? But it's not fair on, you know, the rest of you. You're going to want to touch the ball and stuff and, you know, have fun.
Okay, but you said they're university players, right?
No. This was a youth football. This is youth football.
Oh.
And that's, for me, youth football is not about winning. It's about, you know, developing players, making sure the whole group progresses, not just one individual. So yeah, that was the reason why I done it, because it was getting a bit too much, as everyone wanted to look for him. There's other options.
That affect your group coaching? Was that something you based around just in the individual side of coaching, or was that collectively as a group?
I didn't even tell them what I was doing. I just literally spoke to that guy and said, listen, this is what we're doing today. Yeah, most of the session is going to be like a match. All you're doing today is you're literally going to hold on to the guy's shorts. You're going to stay on his shoulder, on his back. You're always within arm distance of this player. That's all you're doing today. I don't care about the ball. I don't care about anything else. So literally, I only just coached that one defender that day. You stay on him. Don't leave him alone. Literally.
So was it?
No one else was none the wiser as what's going on. I wanted them to kind of make these decisions themselves. I didn't want to force it on them. I wanted it to happen naturally because, you know, if you're always going to pass to someone that can win you a game, it's not a bad idea. But when there is another player in a better situation, that person needs to...
But isn't that player being in a better... Sorry, Cheryl, I don't know if you're going to add something there, but is that player being in a better situation not then subjective? Because now, as an example, if you give the ball to one player in that situation, give the ball to another player in another situation, it's subjective in the sense that that player who's got those 2-3 around him, if you know he can manage that challenge, doesn't that then become, I guess, the indicator of how advantageous his position is, or how likely he is to get success, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I kind of get your point, yes and no. But for me, ultimately, when it comes down to decision-making, it's like, if there's a better decision, it's like, for me, decisions, you rank them in it, 1, 2, 3, 4. And if you keep picking option 3 and 4, 1 and 2, and, you know, just because the player happens to be a better player, I didn't like that, basically. I didn't like it. So I had to do something about it. And the way I done it was very subtle. I just spoke to that one guy for the one session, listen to what you're doing today. And they got the point by themselves. So it worked.
Was that something that was just random, or was it something that you wanted to build into that individual player's growth, so to say? And when I mean into their growth, was it something you continued down the line, or was it something that just for that one moment?
No, so basically they asked me what was going on the next week. They basically said to me, well, like, what was that about? And then so I thought, you know, I'm an honest person. I explain myself. I say, listen, decision-making is very important for me. You can't just keep trying to find the same person. It becomes too predictable. You'll be easy to play against. If I know you're always going to pass it to Yaz...
But if you're getting success, is that a problem?
Yeah, but it's short-term success. I'm looking for long-term
success.
What I'm
trying to say is, okay, all right, cool. Is there going to come a time where Messi's not going to get the ball?
Of course he's going to get the ball.
But my point is, when there comes a time where giving him the ball has become problematic... Then maybe
when there's times and there's better options. When there's better options, that's what comes problematic.
But is there a better option if he's still getting success? It's my point.
Yes. His success is just beating the player and maybe having another person to beat and then maybe finding a pass. But yeah, if you play another pass and can get that, of course that's a better option.
Well, what I'm really getting at is, if it's not broke, why are we trying to fix it?
Are you always going to have a special player playing up front for you?
No, but while I've got him there, then I'm going to utilise him.
But that's not my objective when it comes to youth football. I'm not there to win. I'm there to develop players.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from on that.
Literally, it was getting to a point where it was ridiculous. You're getting your centre-back just trying to...
So then, sure. I'm just playing devil's advocate. Yeah, I'm not saying that you're right or wrong. I'm just thinking, if I was in that particular situation, rather than suggesting the players should do something else, I'd probably just raise their awareness to what else they could do.
I just got this guy to stay on him for the whole session, and the point kind of got across to him without me even having to say anything.
Did that change his game going forward? Did he continue to follow that role, or did he mix it up, or did he?
And
go
then
back
eventually,
to what
yeah,
he...
and then eventually, that kid, after like a month's time, when he realized he was having at least a couple mans on him every match, he'll say to me, "Listen, when we do training, I don't want to do 1v1s no more. I need 1v2s or 1v3s. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely, no problem. Because he never played one-on-one, literally. After he was in our team for 3-4 months, he didn't play one-on-one with anyone on the pitch. He was always 1 against 2, possibly 3. So I had to do that for him in training as well. And the other players were like saying to me, oh, why are we not doing 1v1? Why is he doing 1v2s? I'm like, listen, it's pretty obvious. Like, 1v1, has anyone got the ball off him or anyone not get you? So we're going to try and make it a bit difficult for him. And in some situations, you're going to face this in a match. When you do face a player that's going to need 2 of us to double up on him. So there we go, we're practicing. And I used to do it with like the left back and the left winger. So I used to kind of make it realistic as possible. So I wouldn't just have like the 2 centre-backs doing it. No, I'd have like the left back, the left winger with him, or the right back, the right winger, or maybe a centre midfielder and the centre back, just to try and make it as realistic as possible.
Mm.
So where we're looking at parents and not having a strong understanding what's probably best for their child, was that a discussion you had with them down the line regarding, you know, he's now going from 1v1 to 1v2 or 1v3, and did you give them any specifics to the reason why that happened?
I didn't ask. I didn't have to.
Yeah.
No, I didn't have to. Like, you know, when you've got a good environment going, everyone's happy, you kind of don't really get much aggro from parents. It's like they're just happy because everyone's progressing, everyone's doing well.
I mean, the only reason why I asked it, because you, obviously the same way you sounds like you had a good setup there regarding your relationship with the parents, but some parents can get in a situation where they think you're probably being too tough on their child or you're not being tough enough. And that's why I asked regarding, did you explain that to the parents down the line?
I think that's one of the skills that I have as an individual, is I kind of spot problems before they happen. And I noticed it was becoming a problem. For example, everyone just passing him the ball on a match day, you know. Soon you're eventually going to get some parents like, is there any point of us coming? We literally just stand there and just kick the ball to him, and then he scores the goals, and then we all go home with a win.
So did you change your stance in your coaching, whether it's in group activities or individual-based coaching? In terms of... Just how you, as Yasser alluded to before, you know, this session building, how did you plan going forward regarding, you know, the next set of training sessions, whether it was individual by 1 or 2 people or 1 or 3 people, or compared to the groups? Did you change anything on that level?
In terms
how you
of
prepared?
Doing that, I didn't have all the freedom in the world to affect the session. So it was kind of like a thing, like a syllabus. So every 6 weeks we had to work on this, and the session's already done for us. That makes sense. Which I didn't really like. Okay. I like to kind of do things my own way, but you know, you got to do what you got to do to get paid. So I was happy to do it, and it worked. But obviously, you have that freedom to add things to it. But yeah, I didn't have that total freedom to do all that stuff.
So when you say regarding the you know, doing things, so, you know, you need to get paid. And when we're looking at coaches online that's doing these individual works, as I said earlier on, it looks like they are doing things just for promoting themselves so that they can get more clients, so to say. But it's just where, you know, when you said about didn't have the total freedom because you like to do certain things your way, how did that implement your way of planning regarding whether it was individual or, you know, group coaching?
It had some effect, like, but I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's like it didn't really have, like, a massive effect where I can actually remember, like, what I'd done specifically for that player or for the group. I think this kind of carried on as normal. I just maybe done a couple of tweaks here and there during the session.
Okay.
So is it, I guess, a question for all of you in that respect, to kind of tail off on that one. How do you guys approach, and I'm just touching it a bit there, I mean, I've given a bit of my insight a little, slightly, Sherlin and Benin in particular, how do you guys approach your planning in terms of when you're approaching a team session? How much of an individual aspect is taken into consideration? And does that vary depending on what environment you're working in for that particular session? Or do you guys have a general blanket approach of how you approach your stuff?
Well, like Ahmed touched on, there's different sort of organizations that will put like certain limitations on the way you plan, even to the point that they give you a session plan and whatnot. And within that, within those limitations is where you can implement on certain aspects. So, for example, if it's like a skill-based exercise that's like 3v3, I'll look to specifically set up, you know, the 3 against the 3 in order to challenge certain players within the group. So if it's someone that I feel is, let's say that is like a simple game of like line ball, so they have to stop the ball on the opposition's line that they're trying to defend or something within a small area, I may put certain like constraints within it. So I may say that you're only allowed, like this player is only allowed to tackle this player, etc. So that I'm matching up someone who maybe is, you know, like an elite 1v1 attacker against someone who's an elite 1v1 defender in order to bring out challenges within it. Or it may be.
I understand what you mean by that. But are you then not also then removing certain situations from practice that could occur in the game where, you know, that player will have an opportunity potentially to try different things against those players who maybe aren't as effective at defending them than the others that are, and have to maybe come up with new and try and... Are you not in some ways stifling their creativity and not allowing them to try out different ways of challenging or overcoming that obstacle?
No, not particularly, because it's not something that will last through the whole exercise. It'll be a certain period of it that would exist like that, so that I'm also attacking that player. Because if, for example, if I was to do that, I would tend to, let's say it's like a 15-minute exercise that I'm doing, it'll tend to be about 5 minutes of it that would exist like that. Or it may be a situation where they actually rotate, so they're actually all they're covering different aspects of it. But it may be that I'm predominantly focusing on about 10 minutes with, you know, this very good 1v1 attacker against a very good 1v1 defender, and then the rest of the 5 minutes maybe them alternating amongst each other or just playing free play where they can cover different scenarios, where there'll be scenarios where they may be underloaded, so it may be like a 1v2 aspect of it within that small area, like we always say, like a little game happening within the game sort of thing. So how they get out of those tight areas there like that. So I'm always very conscious when I'm doing sort of opposed practices in terms of the players that I want to go against the players, because for example in the age group that I work with, like that, in terms of like physical maturation, it varies a lot. So like there are kids that have barely started their puberty, then there's boys that are taller than me. So like I question how much they're going to get out of it if I start matching them up against each other. So it's for me, that's one thing I'm particularly quite conscious of, the matching up of players and the particular constraints that I put on it in order to bring up individuals. Because I think we went on about it in one of the previous podcasts when we were talking about planning. But that's one thing that comes into it, that like between me and another coach, we may have for that particular exercise 5 key players that we want to focus on. Of course, it doesn't mean that we're ignoring the rest of the players, but the logic is, we have a team of 15. We have 3 sessions a week. Each session, you focus on 5 key players, so that they're getting some real, you know, some real focus on their sort of individual development plans that they need to meet, and it'll be in line with the topic that we're practicing on for that.
Sure. And just on that note, then, before we move on to show, how much of that is impacted if you are delivering a session alone, or if you're working alongside someone, in terms of how many players, I guess, are targeted, or how much time is spent? And do you both, if you've got a co-coach with you, would you both target those same groups of players, or would you have a separate, I guess, group of players that you're looking at each within the larger context of the group?
Yeah, like firstly, I'll answer the first one. So, like, if it is by myself, like for me personally, the maximum, regardless of whatever the group size is, but for me personally, the maximum that I would like to focus on is like 6, because my natural logic of it is like, let's say that I'm working with like a university team, or like a team that's 18 or above, whatever, adult team, and we're doing the attacking wide players. So like I always think back to the logic of like who my primary players are going to be within that situation, who's going to be the secondary ones. And then the tertiary ones is the ones that I'm also managed, but I'm generally going to be focusing on the primary and secondary players within it. So that's going to be like the wingers and the fullbacks, and then their supporting centre midfielder and centre backs. That if I do have those sort of numbers to do so, but I'm going to be mainly focus around that area, the aspect based on the topic. If it is in regards to, you know, having another coach, that's based on the dynamic that me and that coach has. That can obviously vary in terms of this sort of selections that you do of players, because it may be that coach may have been, you know, has extensive experience of playing as a midfielder at a very decent level. So they may be able to actually address the midfield players better than I can. So that may be their main onus, and they may not actually change from session to session. Or it may be that based on their personality that they have a closer relationship with, you know, a particular group of players within that group that they may be able to address better than me, and vice versa. So it can be based on a number of different aspects in terms of why you would do it. But for me personally, I do like changing it up and not like just making it that, you know, if he is a group of two coaches that they interact with the same group of players each session, that you want like both of them to touch every group as much as they can.
Yeah, I'd pretty much, you know, side with what Ben just mentioned there. I think a big thing is, yeah, your relationship with your partner coach and guiding on what experience he or her brings to the game. So regards to that going forward, it's just it all rounds off on what the topic is, you know. And regarding, you know similar to Ben, you know, we have three sessions a week, and it's a case of we're trying to get at least a maximum of about five players out of the group to gain something from that week's version of the topic. And
it's just on that then, sorry, those players, are they targeted, or are you just saying, right, we're just hoping that five of these players are going to get something?
No, they're definitely targeted, because you've got to look at things where in some places you have, you know, individual sessions for players, whether it's to do with their individual development, and they could be assigned certain things during that block of 6 or 8 weeks of working on this side of their game. So obviously in each topic that you get from the syllabus, you're trying to fit in, you know, as much as possible in your session, which is appropriate for the amount of 4 to 5 kids to at least get something from their targets out of that topic during the week. And then you could have one day having 5 kids and they're gaining something out of their personal targets from your topic, and then you can change it the following session. It's the same topic all week, but each player is going to be getting something out of it, a good percentage out of it, instead of having one topic for a whole group and you're trying to get everyone's, you know, desires out of it, you know, based around their targets, because you're not going to be as effective as if you would do if you were to spread it out.
Yeah. So, I mean, just to kind of draw things to a close, if you guys got any advice for coaches, maybe looking at, I guess, how to potentially implement a one-to-one element or individual aspect to their coaching as well as the team environment, have you got any, I guess, advice in terms of how coaches maybe should approach the situation in that respect?
I just want to say something if there are any parents listening. In terms of like players getting neglected or not getting a lot of attention in the session, I think a lot of parents and players need to understand that the whole industry is geared towards that. Like from my understanding, from what I've seen, from my experiences, academies, I'd go as far as some even grassroots clubs, they're only interested in the exception of players, and it's like they just need other players to make up the numbers just so these players can actually play in the team and maybe possibly make the grade. So I think parents and players need to be aware of that's actually the environment that they're working within. Literally 1% of these players will make it into professional level. So clubs know, academies know, especially when it is at the professional level, a lot of these players are just here just for the exceptional players to have a team to play in and to have people to play against in training. But I know it's a bit controversial to say, but that's the reality of life. So if it does happen in a session, as long as the outcomes are being met and progress is being made, then ultimately the coach can justify it. But it is that type of industry.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from on that one. I think just going back to, you know, the rounding off point, communication is key between coaches and with players and their parents and their clubs. So regarding going forward, whether they're going to start on this individual line of coaching, they've got to give serious consideration, as we've mentioned before, in how they're planning for their sessions. And whatever they decide to work on during their individual personal programs, there's got to be a rationale behind it. The same way Ahmed mentioned earlier on about giving that player a certain target to work on during that session. That was something that wasn't just random and stayed random. It became a highlight that was happening during the session before, and Ahmed noticed it, and a sense where now it was another part of the player's personal individual development. So whether that was in a group setting or a single setting, he or she still got something out of the session and the following sessions going forward on an individual basis. So there's, you know, there's room for both when it comes to the personal training and, you know, group training. But it's about the right communication and a clear understanding of all parties regarding what's best for that player, whether it's a few more sessions in group settings, but with more personal targets based around what he or she needs to improve on. Or if you have that extra time and you're able to have those resources, then you could have the personal training, but with those same key elements in mind as they would do at their grassroots or academy clubs.
Yeah, just the last one for me is just that regardless of if it's one-to-one or team session, you should always look to coach the individuals and try to develop the individuals within the top within the session. And the other thing that I'll say to coaches is that when you are planning and delivering and reflecting, don't look to necessarily coach the topic, coach the players, and let the topic be the framework of which you use to develop them within that. Because what I tend to find is that when you are coaching the topic, you put a lot of limitations on the players and don't actually allow them to express themselves from with that. Whereas the topic should be the framework in which the structure that you need to your session to do it, so that you're not just going in there free will and whatnot. And so, like, the topic presents opportunities for you to develop that player and whatnot. And not just talking necessarily from an academy standpoint, I'm even talking from grassroots, because you spend quite a bit of time with these players, arguably a lot more time than their parents do, just due to the way the world is set up and with school and work and whatnot, and the contact time they get. So you should really be looking to go into every session looking to at least touch five players within that session as an individual coach yourself.
I think that's a great point. I think in terms of, you know, the way I view it is, you're right, Ben, in that the theme of your session, the topic of your session is merely just a vehicle for moving the player from pathway to point B. And that doesn't mean that B is the end point. It's just where they're going to go to next. I think a lot of time coaches can get too bogged down with the topic and the theme itself and identifying a specific outcome from the actual theme, rather than looking at how the players are progressing. And I think it's important that coaches do assess and evaluate how the players are progressing, not just from a technical standpoint, but from a psychological, social and a physical standpoint within that session, to identify whether there has been some success made or some steps made towards achieving success, whatever that may look like for your players within the session. But listen, guys, it's been another very interesting conversation. Thoroughly enjoyed it yet again. Just before we go, if you could just let the listeners know where they can find you if they want to get in touch.
The best part of the show.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at FocusBXN. That is FocusBXN.
If you want to contact me on Twitter or Instagram, it's
SecondBest22. So you've known all along that Ben had a tutor then?
Yeah, I've been tutoring him for about 10 years.
Go ahead, show. Let us know.
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter. Instagram is BelloFigo78, and my Twitter handle is Sherlon.
You need to change that eventually, man.
Nah, guys. I'm Yas. You can find me on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. If you guys can just keep an eye out for the future shows that we're coming up. If you've got any questions, feel free to send them into one of us, and we're more than happy to see to them on the next show. Until then, guys, have a great day. Take care, fellas.
Well, I want to thank everyone for tuning to another edition of the Coaches Network podcast. I've no doubt you've enjoyed it as much as we have. Now that you've got a way to contact all the guys, we look forward to seeing some comments and questions around today's show. And don't forget, head over to the platform that you found this edition on and leave us a 5-star review and let everybody know how awesome the show is. We read all comments, good or bad, so leave that comment for us and take care, everyone. Until next time.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.